entrepreneurship is miserable and awesome at the same time. And what you see in social media is merely the success stories. What you don't see is what's truly behind these success stories.
In today's episode, we have Cass Lazaro. She's a powerhouse entrepreneur who have built, sold one of her companies for $745 million and invested in over 100 companies. She's also the author of the book, Shoveling Shit, The Love Story of Entrepreneurs' Path to Success. And in this episode, we're going to dive deep on what truly takes to become a successful entrepreneur. We're going to dive deep into how to overcome failure, pick the right partners, and redefine what success actually means.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andressa Gadelli. Cass, you have sold one of your companies for $745 million, invested in other 100 companies. That sounds incredible. That being said, you recently launched a book with your husband, Mike, called Shoveling Shit, where you reveal the beautiful thing that happens behind every single company that we know. You have described entrepreneurship as miserable and awesome at the same time. And I am 100% sure that the women listening to this podcast totally agree with you. Now the question is, how can we all thrive in that paradox?
It's such a great question, and thank you so much for having me. Listen, I think especially for female women entrepreneurs, especially those who have children, that entrepreneurship is very much like having children in a lot of ways, because there's a lot of shoveling with kids, right? And there's a lot of really just hard punch you in the face moments. It's a constant struggle. It's a lot of suffering with then little micro wins, right? Each day. It's also like golf. If anyone out there plays golf, you have, you know, if you're lucky, you can have like 90 strokes in a day and only have one of them be really good. The way to thrive in an environment like this is to learn to love to shovel. And that's what we write about in our book, that those entrepreneurs that succeed really love the shovel, learn to love the suffering and be able to still make decisions and move forward despite the fear, despite the, you know, doubt and uncertainty, and still make decisions with the information they know on hand.
I love that, Cass. I'm envisioning, right? Such a great visual, your book, because as you're talking, I'm literally just seeing someone with a shovel. I'm like, am I enjoying the shovel? Am I enjoying
exactly.
the movement? But what's one situation, Cass, for you in your journey, because you've had really an incredible journey, that best captures what that shovel process looks like, or an example of shoveling, if you will. And then I'd love to hear the situation. And then what was that best lesson that you got from it that took you to the next level?
The biggest lessons that we learned were from our failures and our mistakes. And the biggest one that comes to mind was what happened with us with golf.com. So in 1998, I started golf.com with a different co-founder. Mike Caspery is one of the three of us. And then eventually got my husband, on board. And this was like the height of the internet bubble, right? This was just, everything was going up and to the right. This was the boom. We had eToys.com being, you know, going public for billions of dollars. And we jumped on that bandwagon. And in less than about a year and a half, we were acquired by a company out of Silicon Valley named Chipshot.com that made custom knockoff golf clubs at fractions of the price. And they wanted to kind of round out their offering. So we were like, yes, our board was yes, this was great. They were going public. They showed us their S-1 filing that was going to happen in April of 2000. And I think we all know what happened in April 2000. The entire boom burst, the bubble burst. And in late March, we got a call from the president who basically said in literally 10 seconds, I have bad news. Chipshot.com is going bankrupt. Sequoia has pulled out their financing, and you will be going bankrupt with us. So that is an example of just, it was like the shit hit the fan. Like there was just no way, like we were in shock. We didn't have control of our bank accounts. So that was already transferred over to them. And literally they said, you know, if you want to buy it out of bankruptcy, you can. So at that moment, there was just so many lessons that happened. And I'm so grateful for what we learned. Number one, and I don't know if this is something that women do, but I do look back a lot about, you know, my due diligence. And did I miss anything? Should I have picked my head up a little bit more and kind of looked at what was going on in the market? Because there were obvious signs that things were not going great, right? In the marketplace, it wasn't just like one, I mean, it was very sudden, but like there were other companies that were struggling and not getting their funding. But the biggest lesson I think we ever learned in this is don't shine the turd, right? So I remember the three of us, the founders, the three of us saying, okay, what do we need to do? And I said, we need to walk out that door and immediately tell the employees what happened. And they were like, no, let's come up with a plan. I said, guys, there is no way people are going to be able to not see it on our face, right? So we walked out. I told them exactly what was going on. And from that day forward, my transparency has been the number one thing that I lead with. Because we said, listen, this is what happened. It happened to us. It happened to you. We're going to fight for this. We're going back out on the road, but we cannot pay you. We have no money. No one else has any money to give you. And it's okay if you want to leave. Not one person left for that 3 months while we raise money.
Oh, wow.
So huge lesson in transparency.
And in many of those situations can make it or break, right?
Yes.
A lot of investors. And for in the real estate world, there are a lot of deals that are not pending out. And instead of going towards the transparency, some investors are going towards silent. And I think that's a killer behavior, because nobody's going to trust somebody that did not communicate.
Exactly. And one of the things we learned is, you know, people don't mind bad news. They mind surprises, right? And they can tell when something's up. Just like a child can tell when something's up with their parents or there's tension. People understand that. And so, you know, I've always said, you know, I remember in Buddy Media when we were leading the last company, big investors would walk in and out of our office and I could hear people in the office going, oh my God, that's so-and-so. That's, you know, they're coming in. What does that mean? And I just turn around and say, hey guys, listen, we're always fundraising. People are going to come in and out of here and there's nothing to worry about because I'm always going to tell you if there is something to worry about.
Wow, and it takes so much courage to do so. And that reminds me of a moment in our business that we had a lot of money stolen. And it was close to $1 million. And we had investors, right? And we could have waited to tell them or tell them kind of immediately as we were figuring it out. But we were committed to figuring it out. And we chose to actually share with them right from the beginning, not wait to have it all figured out. And I think we didn't go to them to solve the problem for us. We said, this is going to be the plan. These are the actions we're going to take, but we want to keep you informed because you have the right to know right before closing what is going on. And people appreciated that so much. And they were like, what could we do to help? And so
it's
a really good, great lesson, Cass. In your book, you say something, which really I think about, we think about exactly with what going through what you went through. Hard doesn't mean wrong, right? And I love that statement. I'd love to hear your perspective, though, and what you mean by that. Hard doesn't mean wrong.
So I think there's a lot of people, especially when they're running their own business or even leading big teams, that think that when something's hard, it means that they're not doing something right, that they're not following the correct path. It's because the natural tendency for humans is to not want to stay in this uncomfortable state, right? And distress tolerance is very low for most people. I would say for women, it's much, much higher, especially for moms.
Yes.
So it's just a fact. I can't help it. So people start to doubt themselves, and that doubt can lead to uncertainty and fear, and then they get paralyzed and they can't really make decisions, right? So what we say is entrepreneurship is that paradox, like you said. It's the suffering, right, every single day, but it's also something that's incredibly inspiring. It gives you your purpose and you love it all at the same time. So hard doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. It actually is where all the growth happens. That's usually where you find your purpose, is in the hard moments, and you find your strength.
I couldn't agree with that more. Sometimes the women come to us expressing how hard it's been to build a team, and they just fire somebody and they had to, you know, train somebody that just walked out and didn't work. And we're like, congratulations. They're like, no, I don't think you heard me right. I've been through hell the past month. And we're like, congratulations, you're expanding your capacity to grow. And when we are in the midst of it, it really sucks. And we're like, take me out of this pain, right? But when, and you were saying, like, you look back, Liz and I have this habit of debriefing things that work and things that didn't work. It really like taking our egos out. It really like looking at the things that the signs were there. We sometimes ignore the signs, or we're like, we'll make it work.
We'll pound it through, right?
Yeah, we right. pound it through, or we really want to close on this deal. Should we go through it? As I think we get more experience, where we can't ignore those lessons. Otherwise, we're going to be committing the same lessons. But I want to talk about something here that a lot of women try to avoid mistakes as they start growing their business. And you say something here that success doesn't come from being the smartest person in the room, but from making the least bad decision. So what does that like to you in practice?
So, you know, however anyone defines success, and I will say that there is definitely way more of a microscope on women entrepreneurs and women in general. So I want to throw that out there, that it's a little off balance there. But, you know, to be a successful entrepreneur, you are going to have to make very hard decisions. They're not always going to work, and you're going to have to pivot, right, when they don't. And those aren't mistakes, right? Like, those to me aren't failures. People who succeed as entrepreneurs are ones that look at this like, okay, I pivoted, and now I'm one step closer to figuring out where I'm supposed to be, or figuring out what that customer wants. So your job is to make a series of bad decisions, right? But the bad decisions lead you closer to your success. So you get up and you keep moving forward.
Cass, why do you think a lot of people stick with their first plan and avoid pivoting for too long? You're like, no, that's the plan. I put a lot of effort into this. This is my path. And they look at pivoting as you mentioned, like as a failure, that their plan didn't work. Why do you think that we should still try so long on the same path and keep hearing detour, detour? And we're like, ignore, ignore, ignore.
It's because your ego is having a conversation with your gut, and your ego is winning. So every time that, and I do think that people do get that gut feeling, this is not working. And I would absolutely urge every entrepreneur out there that when they're going and, you know, working toward their goals, they also know what success looks like. They've defined it even before they start working on their goals, because that is a good gut check, right? When your ego and your gut are talking and you're like, God, I know something's wrong. No, but I've already told all my friends and family, this is what I'm doing. Or I've raised money with investors and I've told them I'm doing this. And that ego is just taking over, over, over. You have to have mechanisms. And part of that is data. Okay, I said I'd have 5 customers. I have 0. So I'm not successful, right? So that your gut, your ego can get like put in check. The other part is, if you have a gut check, it's usually right. When has anyone said, oh my gosh, I wish I didn't listen to my gut? No one says that. So it's really about, again, sitting in this storm of uncertainty and fear and being able to listen to all the data that's around you and make the best decisions and make them quickly. Because as an entrepreneur, you are trying to go from a startup to a company. So that's your job. And you need to do that without spending as all the money, right?
And so many women that we've seen in our community struggle with trusting themselves. They struggle with listening to themselves. And so I think there are women that are listening right now that could be saying to themselves, I'm not sure who's talking. Is it my ego or is it my gut? Because they haven't practiced truly trusting and listening to themselves and then acting upon what they're getting inspired to do. What do you say to those women?
So I say to those women that no matter what you're doing, no matter what your business is, you have to figure out what your big rock priorities are. So we look at priorities and like how a company grows as you have a jar, you have big rocks, which are the things you have to get done, pebbles, which are things that definitely need to be on the list, but not right now, and sand, which is like, okay, payroll and paying the rent. How are you going to fit them all in the jar? If you put the sand in, then the pebbles, the rocks don't have any room. You have to focus on the big rocks. And those have to be what you look at. We literally tell every single entrepreneur, put it down on paper. You have three big rock priorities. What do you need to do to hit those? And every day look at it. Because then you know, and if you've actually done the work to say, okay, for these three goals, this is what success looks like. You don't have to rely on picking which voice should win, right? And which voice do I need to listen to? You can look at your success metrics and say, oh my gosh, like this is great customer feedback. They actually don't want this. They want this over here, right? And so that's why I don't have five customers. I have zero.
Ooh, let's take a deep breath, everybody. So but here's the thing. We were looking at data, right? 2023 alone, 5.5 million new businesses got started. So in the midst of all the shoveling shit, some people still believe that that is the best thing after invention of fire. But not everybody should be an entrepreneur. Do you think that this urge to become entrepreneur got glamorized by social media? Is that what's happening or what's happening?
You know what I've learned from years of speaking? The right stage doesn't just amplify your message. It builds your credibility. It positions you as a leader people remember. So what sets the top 1% of entrepreneurs apart? Authority. And nothing builds it faster than stepping onto the TEDx stage with over 43 million YouTube subscribers. It is the biggest platform for ideas that spread like wildfire. Leader is making this possible. They're the number one company helping people land TEDx talks with over 650 talks booked for their clients. Want in? Head over to leader.co/events to book your free TEDx strategy session. That's leader.co/events. They'll help you refine your message, create a custom plan, and as a bonus, they'll even guarantee your first 50,000 views. Again, that's leader.co/events, leader.co/events.
1,000%. I mean, I would say, like, look, we all know that social media is, you know, has kind of ruined mental health and democracy, right? So it's obviously going to ruin what everyone thinks about anything. So in a lot of ways, what you're seeing is these wealthy billionaire entrepreneurs that are, you know, in front of their, you know, I don't know, their fancy cars, but they live in the basement with their parents, right? That's the truth. So yes, lots of people glorify what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And our book is about demystifying that glory because it is about hard work and there is no shortcuts. There are no shortcuts, right? Our book is cheat codes to help you not step in the stuff that we did, but we were not an overnight success story. We are a 30-year overnight success story.
Do you think everyone could become an entrepreneur?
So I think my husband and I differ on this answer, and I will tell you why, but I do think he is right about one thing, and that is we are all born as entrepreneurs where we are trying to get what we want met, right? So as babies, you know, we are our own entrepreneurs. I'm hungry, I'm tired, I need a diaper changed. System, society does kind of beat it out of, you know, kids in terms of sit down. This is what you should do. This is how you should be. So I do think that there is a lot of nurture that doesn't help us and help people to become entrepreneurs. But I will also say this. I think people, in my opinion, fall into two categories. They're either operations and execution like people, or they're big dreamers, vision, and product people. And you know them immediately. Those people are up in the sky. We're down on the ground, right? So can everybody be an entrepreneur? There's no way I could come up with ideas without someone who is a visionary. And I don't think Mike and visionaries can do much without an operator. So if you fall in those two categories, we always tell everybody, co-partner with somebody else, co-found a business with someone else that doesn't have your same skill set.
In talking about partnerships, we always share with the women in our community, you tend to partner up with people that are exactly like you. And if you're bringing the same skill set to the table, one of you are not redundant,
basically. not necessary, right?
Not necessary to the company. And when you are married, right, to your business partner, there's another layer. I've heard a couple of things that investors did not invest with you and Mike because you guys were married, and then they walked out of the room without even saying goodbye. And I was like shocked by hear that, but I understood because there's a high, quote unquote, a high risk considering the divorce rates and how would that impact the business. But I see that as like super powerful when you have a couple that understand their skill set, they're complementary, and they also have a happy marriage. I gotta say that because it can be, I don't know if it can be both, but how do you and Mike navigate at the beginning? Because now you guys understand your lanes and it flows. Was there a time that it didn't flow and there were like overlapping of conflicts and different things that you guys were not on the same page?
I think that in our 30-year relationship, we've been married for almost 26 years, the times that we don't mesh are when we're in the same lane. So parenting is one of them. And then we have very different opinions about certain ways to parent. And then I would say writing the book in the beginning, we were in the same lane. But since we started dating, I would come back and I would always ask Mike very product-oriented, visionary questions that I was having at work. Like, please help me with this. And since, you know, on his side, he would come back and say like, how do I get from A to Z? Like, I know this is where we need to go, but like, how do I execute it? And what's the sequence? So we always knew we had different skill sets. So to us, it was just a natural decision to work together because we were already each other's confidants. But I think if you look at any co-founding partnership, you have to take the time to do the serious conversations and the work up front. You have to make sure that your skills don't overlap because you don't want to have that paralysis of decision-making, the micromanagement, the kind of petty wars that you sometimes get because one of you wants to win on a decision. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, how hard do you want to work? Like, have you had that conversation? Do you feel like both of you are working as hard as each other so there will be no resentment? And why are you doing this? Do you have different goals? Is it really ego-driven? I'm not saying that's horrible because us entrepreneurs have to have some ego because we're literally saying like, here's a front row ticket to watch us fail, right? Because most startups fail. But you have to know, is it for money? Is it for security? Is it so that you don't have a desk job? Is it so that you can be with your family when you need to? You should have those conversations. And the other thing is you should figure out why, like, what do each of you do to blow off the stink? Like, for instance, to me, I need like silence. I need to be out in nature. Mike needs to go to fish concerts. You need to know those things before you get into a partnership because you don't want to resent when the other person is taking the time they need to kind of reboot and recharge. These are all the conversations that you have when you're a married couple. And that's why we think co-founding, you know, and picking that partner, that co-founder, is very much like a marriage.
You've invested in over 100 companies, and I'm sure you've met so many co-founders.
Yes.
What are the red flags when you really like their product, you like their company, you meet the co-founders, you're assessing what you need to assess to say, is this something we want to invest in? What are those top red flags when it comes to founders and partnerships?
If, like you said, they've basically gotten through Mike, which is like, do they have a product? Is the market big enough? Because you know, very, very few companies, if any, can build a big company in a small market, right? Do they understand how they're going to ship it, deliver it, market it, all that? And they understand the unit economics, right? Like in general, does it make more than it costs? If they get through that, when they get to me, I'm looking for, do they have overlapping skills? Are they humble? Are they respectful and in awe of their other co-founders' strengths, right? And skills that they bring to the table. And then do they know what they don't know? That's like my biggest thing. If people don't know what they know and they try to answer every single question, this is not going to be who we're going to invest in. I want humble people that say, look, we fill, let's just call it, you know, the technology and the sales side. We are those two co-founders, and we're going to build an extraordinary team that fills in the rest of the gaps because we don't have that expertise. So that's kind of like my big red flags.
I was speaking with a friend of mine yesterday, and she's considering going in a business venture with somebody that she's highly respect. And I was talking to her about how can you vet when things go wrong, how people will react, how people solve problems, how people deal with conflicts. And so far, she didn't get to experience that in any of their interactions throughout the years. So what would you say to her? How can you vet before shit hits the fan? Is there a way?
You're talking about her co-founders, or are you talking about other teams?
A possibility of co-founding a company, or a joint venture agreement.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And that's why we say it's almost like you've got to sit down and have multiple long conversations in which you're both asking each other about conflict. You know, what's your vision of a team? What does a partnership look like? Are we friends? Are we able to take each other's criticism and not take it personally? You know, things like that. Because Mike and I had those conversations. I said, look, if we're going to work together, I am going to say, this sucks. Or, you know, you're not moving fast enough. Cause I don't have any kind of filter when it, you know, what does he always say? I am aggressive, aggressive, not passive aggressive. And so,
I like that. Yeah. Aggressive.
And I said to him,
somebody says you aggressive, Andres. I'm like, no, I'm not. I am aggressive, aggressive.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a new one. That's good for you, Andres.
Yeah. And what I say to him is like, look, if we're going to have this personal relationship or personal friendship, right? If they're, you know, co-founders that are friends, we can't take things personally and then have it carry over into the personal side. So you do need to understand, how do people operate? Are they conflict avoidant? You do not want a co-founder that is conflict avoidant, right? That's never going to work. Okay. Do you want someone who thinks they have a ton of answers or all the answers? No. Do you want someone who's doing this for fame? Fame? Are you kidding me? No. Things like that. So if it were me, I would tell her, have the uncomfortable conversations. Almost do an exercise as if you were doing like a matchmaker, where you're literally dating the person before you say yes and sign those papers, those binding documents of being co-founders.
Yeah. And be able to have multiple conversations, right? It's like, this doesn't happen overnight.
No, you hear it though. Like, oh my God, my friend and I were just thinking like, this is a great thing. And so we did it, and now we're kind of stuck. And you're like, well, why did you do it before you thought through everything?
Yeah. We always say it's like a business partnership is just like a marriage. You don't just meet someone to get married. Well, some people do, but you may want to date a bit and get to know each other.
exactly.
We had recently our investor con, and during one of the keynotes, one of our attendees stood up and asked this really profound question. And she said, is it possible to be ambitious and still be a great mother? And she was tearful, right? She had some emotion around that. You've raised three kids, right? You've been candid about this, the sacrifices and the seasons that you move through as an entrepreneur, as a mother. So what would you say to the entrepreneurs, the women that are listening, that are in the thick of it, and they have those moments? Can I have both?
Yeah. So I was talking about this last night with a woman entrepreneur that came up to us at an event. Here's the thing. I actually think you can only do one thing really well at a time. Okay. And I think if you want something and you put your head down, you got to put 100% in that. I also think that being with children, staying home, raising them is the hardest job in the world. It is much easier to go to work. So for those entrepreneur moms that are out there thinking like basically that they're full of guilt, that they want to figure out how to do it all, you will not be able to. But here's the thing. Here's the secret. 80% is good enough. 80%. They don't need 100%, especially when they're younger. There are a lot of people when you have very young kids who can love them, can read to them. You're talking preschool, taking them to their after school, you know, little activities and things like that. But also we have to give ourselves some grace, because here's the crazy part. I beat myself up for, you know, 20 years thinking I was not there enough in the beginning, even though I calculated that this would be a better time, even though I was like intentional, like I want to do this so hard now so I can get back to them and be there when, you know, bigger kids, bigger problems. Here's the thing. I have three kids that now know that work is a virtue, that working hard matters. Right. And that I was still there for them. They don't ever say like, oh no, like you weren't there for us. You miss things. We've got to give ourselves some grace and realize that they will be okay, even at 80%. And I will say this, 80% effort, focus, concentration from a woman is 1,000% better than anybody else. It's 1,000% better when it's coming from a mom, because we can multitask. So stop trying to be perfect in all areas.
Oof. Another breath, people.
another big breath.
Before, so important to hear. Before we end here, we are all entrepreneurs looking to build a life by design and not regrets and really live a fulfilled life. There's a difference, right, between living and being alive. We want to live. What are your proudest moment in the journey as yourself, as a human being, if you can share with us, what's your proudest moment so far?
I think there's a couple of them. One is I came from a family where my mom often volunteered and gave back. And I took that with me in every company that we've done. And we've picked organizations and activities and led by example. So I'm very proud that in our last company, we got behind Cycle for Survival, and we were the first corporate team. And we've been doing it, Mike and I, for 19 years. And we had like a really fun, proud moment just this past February where Cycle for Survival asked us to do the entrepreneur ride, like the first one, and try to recruit entrepreneurs in New York City. And we did that. We raised a ton of money. But the best part was that 35 old Buddy Media employees from 13 years ago came and rode with us. So
wow.
I think that really made me feel proud that I was able to lead by example, that giving back is it. Like, look, if you're going to be an entrepreneur and all you want is a ton of money, I mean, shame on you. If you want a ton of money, give back, right? You should be doing this in service of others. Right. So I think that was like my biggest, proudest moment.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Hopefully you got a lot of pictures of that. Just sort of
yeah.
memory of them with you.
And I'm so sorry, Liz, they wore the old Buddy Media t-shirts and hats. And it was just,
it
made me feel great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
And that doesn't happen overnight. That happens as a result of the leadership that you and Mike had and the courage that you had. So kudos to both of you for that.
Thank you.
Cass, this has been amazing. So many great reminders, nuggets, and perspectives as we're growing as entrepreneurs and all the roles of our lives. So where can everyone listening learn more about you and connect further with you?
Well, if you'd like to read our book, you can go right to Amazon. It's there, Shoveling Shit. And if you'd want to learn more about us, go to cassandmike.com. You can see all the different things we've done, all the investments we've made. And please reach out to us at info@cassandmike.com. We love entrepreneurs. We love their hope and optimism. And we're happy to help. That's what we want to do, is spend the next 50 years giving away every bit of help that we can.
Awesome. All this information you guys can find on our show notes. Cass, thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.